There we go. That's annoying. Okay. All right. I am here joined with Emily Rousseau, who is a poet, a Substack writer, a tarot person. What is the word for that?
Reader, I guess.
Tarot reader, an astrologer or astrologist. And maybe we'll talk about that as well. My uncle, Dan Pastelli, who died recently, was once head of the Pittsburgh Astrological Society. And he went on the radio in that capacity and was, and this famously in my family, was introduced as Don Pasquarini. And I noticed on the podcast I've heard you on, there's often a beginning conversation about how to pronounce your name. But I think we've settled on Emily, if that's right.
Yeah, that's, I mean, yeah, I'm open to like other pronunciations. But yeah, that's good.
I'm open to Pasquarini as well. So you can find Emily at Substack. She's at Emily, EmmaLea.substack.com, EmilyRousseau.com, and on Instagram, where you are Emily.Rousseau. I think that's it, right? You're not on Twitter.
Correct.
Me neither. I think it's probably destructive to the soul somehow, though I do read it, which is also destructive, but at least I don't participate. Emily and I got in touch due to what you call your poetic cancellation. So I wanted to ask how that was going. So you published an article in Compact Magazine earlier this month about how you have a forthcoming volume of poetry with a small press that the publishers got in touch with you and said you have this and that association. I assume Compact Magazine was itself the association. I'm just guessing. And that we therefore can't publish your work, or you have to justify yourself to us if we are going to publish your work. And so that ended up being canceled. And you had a really nice essay kind of going through, kind of rehearsing some of the earlier iterations of this. You talked about Jürgen Habermas calling Georges Bataille a fascist. And I think that was his shtick, Habermas. I think he called all those guys fascists, and how, you can't, this just this logic of purity and of contamination not only doesn't work because everybody's complicit in some destructive social structure, but also because that in itself, this quest for purification, is a fascist gesture. So I was just wondering, a few weeks on from that, how is your poetic cancellation going? What's the status of your book? What's happening there?
It's a funny question. How is my poetic cancellation going? Yeah, that's interesting. I have no memory of calling it my poetic cancellation, but I guess it could mean that it's like somehow poetic, but also I guess it could mean that it's trying to cancel whatever poetic thing I'm attempting to do. Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting. I wonder what cancellation is. I guess I still don't really know if I have like a handle on what it is or what it means, but I guess my sense is that it has something to do with reading and not reading, or willfully unreading maybe. So in that sense, I guess it's not unrelated to tarot and astrology and all these other readings we'll talk about, but my book is not, that's kind of just standing there, paused, doing nothing. I'm not sure what I'll do with it. I'm open to suggestions, from anybody. And I think I'm just kind of getting used to like having people openly say mean things about me, which I didn't. I mean, it sounds silly, but I that really wasn't much of a thing on the internet, to my knowledge. I'm sure people said mean shit behind my back, but so that's been fine. It's been a kind of interesting like way of finding out who my friends are and maybe who they're not. I think it, like, aside from the emotional tumult, it's been kind of fascinating, I guess, because some people have written really smart, nice things, like yourself. I think you actually wrote my favorite thing on your Tumblr post. It was very poetic. And some people have written some not so nice things. So I've been trying to kind of like detach and just kind of observe, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask? I've self-published a couple of novels. Is there a reason you wouldn't self-publish?
No, I guess I would. Maybe just I've never done it, so I would have to like not be lazy and like learn how to do that.
Yeah, and it can be a pain in the ass, especially you have to do all your own formatting, which I assume is even more complicated with poetry than it is with fiction. So yeah, that would be annoying. And you have to
Although maybe not, maybe it is a possibility with this one because the formatting is done and I have it. So yeah, maybe I'll do that, John. Good idea.
Thanks. All right. So, I'm glad to hear that you've been able to detach and that it hasn't been too traumatic. I've strangely never been canceled, even though
strangely.
I almost court it, but it's never happened.
Wait, may I ask how and why you court it?
Why I court it is probably a question for you and your capacity as astrologer. but I just publicly take a lot of interest, like, you know, contrarian positions,
mm-hmm.
usually in ways that over time add up to canceling each other out. So I don't know what that means, but it's kind of a public performance. But one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you is because nobody, you know, I published in right-wing adjacent magazines the same way you did. And I even, you don't seem to take very many public political stances, but I did these things and nobody said anything to me. But I thought people seemed a little more disturbed or more askance when I suddenly did start looking into things like tarot and astrology.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't know what that's about. It might be about the poetry world being different from the fiction and public comment world. Probably a gender thing as well, different things expected of men and women, I would imagine. But
like a dude gets into tarot and everyone's like, oh my God, what's going on?
Right. Like, you don't expect it, you know, a man has shitty political opinions. What do you expect of men? But tarot, that's for right. Girls. So yeah, I thought that was interesting. And I guess as a way of getting into that, I wanted to start talking about poetry and, you know, the occult or whatever you want to call it. I did read one of your books because I know personally that there's nothing more annoying than if you're like an internet niche person who writes books, but people just want to talk about what you write on the internet and nobody reads your book. So I didn't want to have that happen. So I did read Graffiti. I have it here.
Confetti.
Confetti. What did I call it?
That was interesting though. Graffiti.
it's some fucking Italian
it's word. Close. You're close. Yeah.
Sorry, that's, you know what it is? Your previous book that I didn't read was called G, and I just
yes, care. You combine them.
Yeah,
so. And G could be for graffiti. In fact, you know, maybe it is.
Right. At least I didn't say Frappuccino or something. So it is
unicorn Frappuccino.
Yeah, it is confetti, not graffiti. That's an interesting.
Hey, thanks for reading it, though.
Oh yeah, no problem. Are there Jungian slips the way there are Freudian slips? We'll have to talk about that. But you have a line in the book. So it's a collection of poetry. It deals with film, the relation between film and reality. It also has a strong sense of various places that I thought was interesting. It talks about, I thought the main kind of occult idiom you were working with here seemed to be more alchemy than anything else. Though I confess I don't know that much about that. But there's a line in one of your poems that I thought maybe we could start with as an entry into this. So you have a poem called Figure. And this is one of those poems where the title is part of the first line. I'm sure there's a Greek word for that, but I don't know it. But it reads like this. Figure is that which is contained by some boundary or boundaries. When the figure escapes, what then? And I think you're getting there at something that makes people nervous about some of these occult systems, which is that if you're in the world of poetry or in the world of theory or in the world of literature, as it's been in broadly postmodern times, it's kind of all about what is escaping boundaries. And you write a lot about that in Confetti. I'm going to keep thinking graffiti every time I say confetti. In Confetti, there you have a recurring image of dissolving, you know, tea, honey dissolving in tea, or recurrent images of eating and then vomiting, the sort of porous barrier between the inside and the outside. And confetti itself, as you say in the afterword, you quote somebody, I don't remember who, about how, you know, confetti is itself this figure of what's mixed up and then thrown and scattered and spilled. And I think what people worry about is that, okay, you have these tarot cards, you have these star signs, you have these Kabbalistic spheres, and there's something essentialist about it. You it's all about capturing this figure, nailing things down. And when you think, this goes back to the cancellation of the political task of quote unquote postmodernism, is to be anti-essentialist, to unbind us from these identities. And I think you write poetry very much in that vein of a kind of non-linear use of language, a language that calls attention to the materiality of the signifier, blah blah blah. We've been to grad school. I'm not dismissing your practice. I'm dismissing these vocabularies we've learned. But so how, I guess that's a very long way for me to ask, what do you see as the relation between your interest in these systems with these defined figures and archetypes and this poetic practice that it's much more about these figures escaping?
That's a beautiful question. The quote, I appreciate it. Yeah, because you're right. I guess a lot of people do want to just talk about internet writing. I hadn't really thought of it in that manner, but it was nice to hear the confetti graffiti quote. So I think you're right, first of all. I think that some of people's problems with this occult stuff, the tarot, the star signs, the archetypes and what have you, has to do with this fear of nailing things down. And this is like the naughtiest word now, like essentializing or essentialism. So I think one thing that I think about is that all of these systems, like alchemy, astrology, tarot, are ways of actually creating new lines and new ways of seeing between two things, two or more things. So it really is about relating and movement and escaping from or breaking the frame or the figure just as much as it is about like nailing down. I think it's this constant process of nailing and unnailing, which I was sort of attempting to do in Confetti, I guess, and maybe is what I attempt to do like in all of my work in different ways. But I think you really can't have one without the other. So I was thinking about this in Confetti, for instance, in terms of like sunrise and sunset, which I was thinking of as like kind of originary beginnings and endings. And so the book starts with sunrise and ends with sunset, but also there are like all of these weird engines in the middle that, yeah, you're like dissolve and vomit and spin down the drain and kind of like deal with these beginnings and endings in ways that complicate them, I guess. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, one of the interesting things about tarot, I'm very new to all of this, so this is the one I'm kind of learning the most, is it's always a new combination of cards. You know, every time you shuffle, there's a new combination of cards. So, and they each comment on the other, and they each set up a new narrative. So it never is this fixed thing. And one of the things I've learned, I don't know if you probably do read serious like occult books about tarot, but I'm too lazy, so I've just been watching YouTube tarot readers a lot to kind of get a feel for it. And they, one of the things I think is interesting, and there is kind of a, some of them are kind of have a vibe of the charlatan about them, and it's interesting to watch. There are some whose brand is obviously they're keeping it positive, like every reading is you're going to meet the man of your dreams, your money's going to come in. And so they always have to spin the card that comes up as positive. And that in itself is an art, like watching them, you know, give you the positive spin. But then I have read enough to know, you know, that even the superficially positive cards can have a negative valence or trying to be telling you something more serious about your life. So it isn't, it isn't, how can I put this? We could say that we're still in the realm of Lacan, because it's all structured like a language and everything is different from itself. And if they say Jung is a Nazi, they can say, we can say, well, okay, tarot is still in the realm of Lacan, I guess. If anybody understands Lacan, but, so that, yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. And I'm sure it works with the other things as well. Can I ask you a real simple, basic seeming question about astrology?
Please.
How literally do you take it?
That's, for some reason, that's like breaking my brain. It seems actually like, what do you mean by literally? What do you mean by that? I'm too dumb for the dumb question.
I mean, is it just something you're happy to think with, or is there at least part of you that takes the influence of the stars on material conditions on Earth seriously?
I see. It's more the first one. It's more the something I'm happy to think with. I don't think that like something Saturn is doing right now is literally causing something in my body or whatever. Although, of course, I don't think we can like really deny the like lunar influence, obviously. Although maybe I'd be called fascist for that. I don't know. but yeah, it's more, I think of it as just like a tarot card. When you pull it, you're not like, oh, okay, this is the Wheel of Fortune and it's causing X, Y, or Z emotion or spinny wheel thing in my immediate environment, but you're saying, how does this wheel correspond to something in my life right now or in the past, and how is like a reading or a way of seeing being opened up by that line? So that's how I think of the stars as well, you know, like this thing that's happening celestially might correspond with something or associate, to use the Cancellor's word, be associated with something down here. And then that to me makes for like infinite and interesting readings. And alchemy, my interest in alchemy is like totally tied to astrology because they're sort of like sister sciences. So alchemy we could think of as like astrology in the dirt, you know?
No, I like that. That's good. That'd be a good title for something. You said it though, you can have it.
How is yours?
You don't have to answer any personal questions, but how did you get into the occult and Did you get into poetry first, the occult first? Were you raised with it? How did it enter your life?
The occult.
I'm just using that as the umbrella term for these things. I know it's kind of a word.
I was not raised in it. Were you? No.
No, I was raised, I went to Catholic school. And then my dad, whose brother was an astrologer, but my dad is just kind of a materialist. So I had Catholicism and materialism. So I had to find literature to chart my own path.
Got it. Yeah, I grew up like kind of Catholic or like hungover Catholic. I found them, I mean, it's like very hard to say, it's a blur, but I think probably around the same time, very early, I think of them as like totally connected and like inextricably linked for me. Mercury is the messenger god who is said to rule over astrology, and also he rules poetry, as you probably know, and stealing and stuff like that. So I guess it makes sense. But there's just something about both that about like poetry and these like occult practices that seem to have like just emerged simultaneously in my life. Although I mean, I get asked this question, but I don't know that I can pinpoint like a moment. I think probably I turned to astrology as a way to like hope. I tried to like to not be so tortured, you know, like it felt like self-help to me to like to read about these planets, and it was more interesting to me than like therapeutic language or like positive thinking or some of the religious stuff I grew up around. So to me it was like an interesting way to language and think about my problems.
How did it, this is the question a therapist might ask, how did it make you feel less tortured? Because it kind of gave you an external image of what you were going through?
Yeah, I think so. Something about the way that, so this really clicked into my brain, this idea of, okay, there are these planets and they all have different ways of thinking about time or ways, you know, ways of being in time. And they're also kind of communicating with each other. And then there's the moon, which we can see, and the sun, which we can see. And there are these lights of our lives, but they light them in different ways. And they're always kind of taking cues from each other. So to me, it was like this narrative, this very interesting narrative that I could then apply to things in ways that felt more like juicy than anything I had yet encountered.
And what are you primarily, so I want to talk more in detail in a minute about what you're doing on your Substack now, but a lot of older poetry is explicitly, you know, we have Dante, Edmund Spenser, Milton, they're kind of deliberately writing their poems in ways that correspond to astrological readings. And then there are modern poets like Yeats who, you know, that their poems are dictated by spirits. Do you do anything like that?
And I think Yeats was an astrologer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do I do anything like that? I guess not. I haven't been like dictating from spirits, really. I'm sad to say. I don't feel that I'm taking much dictation. But I guess I do it through those older writers. You know, I'm really drawn to them. I just recently taught a class on T.S. Eliot, who I feel like does that in a kind of way too. And like H.D., who I adore, and who's from my hometown, actually, Pennsylvania. And so, yeah, I don't, but I do it like through, I commune with, I kind of do it like secondhand. Yeah. But I'm thinking of doing, actually, it's funny you mentioned Spencer, because I was thinking of doing him next on the newsletter.
Oh, that would be fun. I read The Fairy Queen 2 years ago, and it's something. I don't even know how to characterize it.
I know. I think it would be a whole other level of strange torture going through it, but I think it would be fun. I read it because of Polya.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Oh, probably, you did?
Yeah. Probably a lot of people in that position.
She's like, it's like, she was just like raving about it and how cinematic. And I was like, okay, I'll
like
try.
It's like the key to her whole system. It's like the centerpiece yeah. of her thought. It'd be something if all the Red Scare fans read The Fairy Queen.
Right, I know. but there's also like Frances Yates writes about the Fairy Queen and like Queen Elizabeth in this very interesting way that also connects to like the Virgo archetype. And I'm a Virgo, so you know, it resonates.
And Spencer was
you
a Virgo.
Probably knew that. Were you getting like a download that I was a Virgo?
No, I'm still working on astrology, though I did find out. So my two big modern writers, I'm on the fiction side more than the poetry side. My two big modern writers were always Joyce and Woolf. And I recently found out, I guess I knew this about Joyce because his birthday is near mine, but I recently found out they were both Aquariuses. And I was like, ah, perfect. That
And makes you're an Aquarius.
Yeah. So.
Ah.
Yeah, no, you have to do the Fairy Queen now. That's the, now that you've said it, I just
didn't. Now that I've said it, I'm putting it out there.
Yeah, you're really going to get canceled because he's even more fascist than Dante. The whole.
I know, like no one's canceled me for Dante. I guess they're just, they like accept that Dante is like part of the canon and cool or something.
Right. But even Dante didn't call for the Irish to be exterminated entirely the way Spencer did. So.
I don't think people know that though, so it's like, well, now they do because you know,
as I said,
so you just yeah, I've been canceled for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, you're a hibernophile or hibernophobe. I think I was going somewhere with that, and then we started talking about if you dictated spirits. No, I interrupted myself to ask you a different question in the middle of my question. Who are your favorite, like, contemporary poets or modern poets?
Like modern poets, so living or dead, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. I'm just curious.
I mean, it's like I have. People, I'm looking around my room now. I have people that I'm always like going back to, like Louise Glick is here next to me, Cynthia Cruz, a couple fascists, like T.S. Eliot and Dante, of course, and Jung. I've just like inherited his collected works.
Oh, which is
like,
that
do you see? This is like all of.
Wow.
It's like a shit show. And who else? I mean, I love Ariana Rhines.
She was on Red Scare. Oh.
Yeah, a long time ago. That was a good one. And Vanessa Place was on Red Scare too.
Right, yes.
Do you know her? She was an early, she was like canceled before canceling was a word.
I know, she was canceled because she was tweeting out Gone with the Wind. I think,
mm-hmm.
and a conceptual piece, and just unvarnished, Gone with the Wind. And then she did. She went on Red Scare because she did. Didn't she do the Book of Rape Jokes?
Yeah, she did the Rape Jokes book, mm-hmm. And she's a, like I think she's a criminal defense attorney. I like her novel, which is right here, La Medusa, which is kind of a cool like. LA labyrinthine bonkers text and HD. I always go back to HD and T.S. Eliot obviously and Yeats, like those are a good like modernist holy trilogy for me. I'm just free associating now, but
no, that's
there
good.
Are more, there are more.
Yeah,
what about you?
Me, well, like I said, I'm kind of not
A fiction guy.
I'm more of on the fiction side.
Well,
But
I'm reading a novel right now too, so we can talk about fiction if you want to name some fiction people.
what's your novel about?
Oh.
I shouldn't have asked that. Nobody can answer that kind of a question.
It's yeah. It's I guess I'll say it's kind of like Pale Fire, but with a mother and a daughter.
Ah, okay. I like that.
That's all I'll say.
Okay. And what novelist do you
I
like?
do love Nabokov.
Okay. Who else?
What other fiction guys?
I don't mean to turn this
Isaac.
into an interrogation. Who
I know, geez, I'm searching my room, like who
else? Name more
D.H.
writers.
Lawrence.
Oh,
I'm like
yes.
looking around my room.
Yeah. I
I
love
do
you.
like D.H. Lawrence.
Yeah, you fascist again.
And a Virgo. Thomas Hardy. I'm kind of obsessed with his trajectory because he wrote all those novels and then quit novels forever and started writing exclusively poetry and then was buried in two separate places. I love his Emma poems.
Yeah, you mentioned them in the latest. I'm not familiar with those.
Oh, they're good, man. So sad. I mean, I kind of, it's like one feels bad for his wife who he was married to while he wrote all of his, but that's just what it's like, I guess, to live with a writer, you know? They're always yearning.
Right. I wouldn't read too much into it if I was his wife.
You just be like, let it go.
His
Have fun.
imagination. Yeah, no, I like D.H. Lawrence a lot. He's someone I had to like learn to appreciate over time, because he is do the astrological signs link up with the four elements?
Yeah.
What's Virgo?
Earth.
Obviously, D.H. Lawrence, Thomas Hardy, they're the poets of Earth, the novelists of Earth. I love,
Airy.
yeah, I like airy, I like flights of fancy. I like that they're always bearing the water of the stream of consciousness in Joyce, Woolf, Toni Morrison, other.
So you would put those people in the airy camp. That's interesting. Yeah, I guess I would agree.
Yeah, Toni Morrison's an Aquarius too. I love Don DeLillo. I don't know his sign, because I do like novels that kind of take on the political in an explicit way sometimes.
I love Libra. I love that book.
Yeah.
I haven't read my I've read White Noise and I watched the horrible movie. And yeah, but I haven't read him in a while. I'm like blanking on fiction writers, but I'm trying to become a better reader of fiction now that I've been suffering through the write. I mean, you're right, like writing novels is hard,
It really is.
you
I don't like to
Like, how
compare.
are you not killing yourself? It's so hard.
It's funny because I don't like to complain because I know it doesn't look hard. I'm just sitting here typing, but there's so much to keep in mind. There's just so many facts about your fictional world that you have to know and balance, and then when you try to correlate it with the world of cancellation, because my novel is about, it's not the only reason I've turned toward the occult, but I also grew up reading the famous occultist comic book writers like Alan Moore and Grant Morrison. And so I've always wanted to write a novel about an occultist comic book writer. So I'm doing that, and it's also bringing in some contemporary stuff about gender in a way that I think will irritate everyone, or is irritating everyone as I serialize it.
Is it irritating people?
Well, I don't know. Nobody's told me they're irritated yet, but I may have released already the most scandalous chapter from the gender thing, because I kind of satirize the academic politics of pronouns, where,
Oh, yeah, that's good.
yeah. So I'm sure the left didn't like that, but also I take for granted the fluidity of gender, which would annoy my right. I think I do have both left and right wing readers, and they're probably both annoyed. But yeah, so that's kind of why I got into this, because
That
I thought
makes
everyone
sense.
should know more about these things, but also, for some personal reasons as well. So.
Well, I mean, I guess these questions of like, the elements in astrology and tarot, and also like masculine, feminine energies, of course, they're everywhere. And so I think there's a way that they probably irritate both quote sides or whatever, which I'm don't really feel in line with either with you know either, which I feel like maybe we share.
Right. No, same here. All right. Sorry, I'm looking at my notes. I shouldn't be narrating this. It should feel spontaneous. Do you have a title for your novel yet, or is it too soon?
I do have a title, although you know it might change, but I've been working on it for a long time. It's called The Container.
The Container. Okay. And I first heard you on Contain podcast.
Freaky.
I'm reaching for synchronicities, just to be more witchy. The Container, and it's about a mother and daughter. I'm starting to see it already. Okay.
Yeah, I feel like we're connected. Yeah, you I'm beaming it to you.
So next time we talk, I'll call it by the wrong name, as I call
Oh, I have it. Yeah, you'll call it like the vessel or something.
it.
It'll be like almost, but
Right.
so I do have a question. If you had to say like what, because I like this idea of like associating certain books with a certain element, like what element would you say confetti is?
That's a good question. Confetti. I feel like, I mean, you're dealing with at least three, because there's a lot of liquid in containers, out of containers, but there's a lot of earth that has a strong sense of place. You have a very vivid early poem about vomiting in Iceland, but you sort of have different places. You talk about, I think you and I, you're from Bethlehem, PA, you said? Okay, I'm from Pittsburgh, which aren't that close, but I think we both share the post-industrial thing. You talk
Yes.
about abandoned mills frequently, which I think of as earthy things. You have a line in here about oh, I can't remember it, but it's something about a furnace that's, oh, you put it so beautifully, but I don't remember what it is, about a furnace that doesn't burn anymore. But you put it into two words. I should have memorized it. But you talk about going to LA. I liked when you said you went to the Grove, because I went to the Grove when I was in LA. So earth, but then also air, because you're always talking about the sunrise, the sunset. You do this thing where you kind of schematize film stills, you know, this use of space that's
Yeah.
very airy. What are we missing? Water. No, we said water. We're missing one. Fire.
I like describe it as a vivid poem about vomiting in Iceland. Everyone's like, what the fuck? I was going for truth and beauty, but there's a lot of vomit along the way.
That's okay. No, it's beautiful because you're vomiting as you see. Hold on, I'll just read the part. Yellow bile landed on the landscape as mountains rose all around, breathtaking. I don't think anybody would say anything bad about that. So yeah, I think we have them. I didn't get a lot of fire, maybe because they were put out when the mills were abandoned. But what do you think?
I don't know. I think, I mean, from what I've read, I'll answer about your work. From what I've read of your work, I just intuitively feel like it's earth and air, but I'm sure all the elements are swirling in their ways, but those are the ones that like come forward. In terms of my own stuff, I'm clearly obsessed with containers and what escapes them, and the alchemical container being like you know, the one I guess I come back to the most. And the body, of course, like figures the body as a container, and that's both closed off and porous. So I think that's another reason I'm into like revisiting a lot of medieval and Renaissance stuff, because I do feel like there's something like more contained about that body or the way that body is written, as opposed to like the postmodern body that we kind of started out talking about, which is sort of like porous and linked up and, you know, spewing things.
Yeah, I think that was the question I wanted to ask you earlier that I interrupted myself about, which is your attraction to a poet like Dante,
Oh, right.
Who's so formally structured in ways both poetic form, the Terza Rima, but also I think there are numerological things having to do with threes and nines and all of that. And it's so, you know, in one register, we could read that as a kind of fascist desire for closure. And you practice this poetics of the signifier. Here we go again with the academic language. And so I'm interested in what draws you as a writer to a writer so different.
I mean, in general, I'm really attracted to difference. I do think, not to make art or culture or whatever like a utilitarian thing, but I think if it's for anything or accidentally for anything, it has to be about that, you know, like difference, which I think is why I wrote that like article about my poetic cancellation, you know, because I saw it as a threat to difference or a kind of fear of difference in some way. So I think there's just that basic desire, but also partly, honestly, I think it's to combat the kind of like mind fuck, airy liquidness of the internet. And I had been doing Cosmic Edges, my newsletter, for a long time, and I felt like I needed some kind of net or way to read the world once a week or twice a week or whatever. And Dante came, like, kind of just came to me, he refound me. So I just didn't even think. I was like, I'm not gonna think about it. I'm not gonna think about how fucking long it's gonna take or if people are gonna like it or care. I'm just gonna start with the first canto of Inferno and go all the way through and not stop.
Yeah, and you just started Purgatorio. I don't know. I mean, I've just come to look forward to it. Like once a week, there'll be a new canto. What's your favorite Dante translation?
I'm kind of like a translation whore. I'm like moving back and forth between four, like three or four, you know.
Yeah, I noticed. That's why I asked.
Yeah, I bop around. So I don't know if I have a favorite. The most like legible to me is the Hollander one, probably. But I do like the Longfellow for the sort of like Victorian, florid, frou-frou vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And like Mandelbaum. I can't really, it kind of depends. But yeah, I'm in purgatory now. I'm glad you look forward to it. That makes me happy.
Yeah. So I think it's proverbial that Purgatorio is the poet's favorite of the three. Is it yours?
Is that? I didn't know that.
I think so, because he's always talking to poets. You know, he has that.
Oh, so wait, are you saying that like poets generally like Purgatorio best?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's like the artiest because he's like happening upon all these, right, like poets and artworks. And he's it's about light, which I think is why I love it, because it's like this weird, I think a lot of Purgatorio is reading light and shadow and trying to sort the image from the real thing. So because it's this bridge between the like sort of image heavy arena of hell and reality, the reality that we can't handle, that is paradise. But I guess I don't know if it's my favorite. It might be right now. It's like really nice to be out of hell, actually. Yeah. At least Dante's hell. So I'm happy to be, I like the climbing, you know, it's kind of funny to me. Like they're like mountain climbers. And I like when Virgil becomes kind of like a climbing guide and tells him like where to put his foot and stuff. I might just be going slowly insane, but I love Paradiso. I'm really looking forward to that. And I know that that was Elliot's favorite. And I think he at one point said that like the final, I believe like the final canto of Paradiso, in his opinion, was like the finest poetry written in the English language, or not in English, in all of like poetry. So,
oh wow, his final vision, I guess, of
mm-hmm.
He sees Jesus sort of inscribed in a circle, as I recall. It's been a couple of years, but
yeah,
I'm simple-minded and found the Paradiso a bit dry, to be honest. But I might need.
I mean, yeah, it's really dry. That's like, part of me is like, does Elliot really like it the best, or is he just trying to be smart? You know.
Yeah, he said to Coriolanus was his favorite Shakespeare play. So,
yeah, I know.
Always trying, okay?
Really?
So, yeah, I don't know if I said this at the beginning in the introduction, but your project on your Substack, for listeners who may not be familiar, is that you're going canto by canto through the Divine Comedy at cosmicedges.substack.com. No, it's just at emily.substack.com, but it's called Cosmic Edges. Where'd you get the name Cosmic Edges?
Do you remember when quarantine first started? Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Feels like a long time ago. So I taught a class. I randomly decided to teach a class, like right when lockdown started, about like what I guess I called like the hidden places in the astrological chart. So different houses and whatever that are kind of hidden or considered to be like problem houses, places where things kind of sneak up on you. And I called this class, and I called those spaces Cosmic Edges. And then I changed my newsletter name to that.
Mm-hmm. What had it been before?
You know, I just was trying to think about that. I honestly am totally, it's gone. Maybe it'll come back to me. It's been a minute, like 4 years, 3 years. I don't know.
Yeah. You do.
How long have you been doing yours?
I've been blogging in one form or another for a very long time.
I know you have a crazy archive. It's so impressive. You're like, link here for, it's like everything possible has been written about.
Well, it's just because I've been doing it for a long time. I mean, I was on LiveJournal in 2002. So, yeah.
That's how old are you? You don't have to answer it.
No.
Okay. You can bleep it out.
Never ask a gentleman his age. But my Substack is only a little over a year old. But I do, I mean, Substack, I don't know how they do it, but they get you an audience, they get people paying you. I mean, it's it's something I've never seen on any other platform. It sounds like I'm advertising for them, but but like I was 500 followers very quickly. I had, you know, paying customers pretty quickly. I think
that's probably more to do with you than Substack. People probably just wanted to read your shit.
I do think they have some kind of a thing where they advertise you to other people or something. I don't know.
I've like, but you're better at these things. Like you do notes and stuff. Like I've not ever like done a note or like a restack or like all these new things. I don't understand what they are.
I tried notes for a little while and then I kind of drew back because it was kind of the anti-Twitter, but it just started becoming Twitter pretty quickly.
Oh, okay. It
started becoming like MSNBC dipshits fighting with MAGA dipshits. And I was like, okay, this is what I'm trying to avoid here. So I kind of drew back from notes a little bit. I don't know if it helps to advertise. But yeah, your Substack seems to be going well, though. It said somewhere that you have thousands of subscribers, I think.
Yeah, they say that. they're lying. No, I have, yeah, like, well, not paid. I do not have thousands of paid subscribers, although I would love that. That would be amazing if like all I had to do was Substack, right?
Well, that you. This might be just a sneaky way of asking you something I already asked you, but you do also professionally do astrological and tarot readings, right?
Yeah, I do readings professionally and I teach and I do a number of odd jobs. Although I'm imagining now like a life of just like writing about Dante once a week, and that sounds good.
No, I'm gonna say I adjunct teach as well and do odd writing things. So I'm in the same boat. How can I put this? I don't know. This is a sensitive question. What's a reading with you like? You seem to not want to claim the divinatory power of these things. So what?
Wait, what do you mean by divinatory power of these things? Like, because I think I do, I think I might be, I think I do, in a sense, I'm very into I think of them as divination tools.
Okay, so you do.
Well, I guess I understand divination to be a kind of, to be essentially what I was talking about before, like these ways of reading associations and correspondences as opposed to outright causes. That to me is like divination, but I guess the divinatory power, I guess maybe you're speaking of this sort of like higher transcendent potential, which is like, sure, you know, I think that's there, but I guess a reading with me is like, I tend to work with a lot of artists and writers or people making something. So I tend to talk with them about their work and how these different like planetary or tarot images might be able to like either point them in a direction or open some new door up or whatever. So a lot of it is not, you know, necessarily like, how can we help you with your life problem, but it's more like work focused. I'm not like one of those however you described it at the beginning, like positive, spinning everything into a positive. I don't really do that. You know, it's quite chill, pretty informal. We kind of just talk, and I always bring up the chart visually to look at, because I think of astrology as very kind of imagistic and screen, and I think of it as a sort of like screenshot of the movie of the sky, if that doesn't sound too corny.
Yeah, that should be a title for something, the movie of the sky. You're just coining these phrases. Yeah, and that's good. That sounds interesting. Especially, I like the idea that you're, because as I was saying, you can find 100 people on YouTube to tell you if your man's coming back to you, but it's that special focus on artistic projects and how you can use that. I thought when I was working on my novel, if I would use the tarot to plot it, because I don't know if you're familiar with Philip K. Dick, The Man in the High Castle. He used the I Ching is something they consult in the book, but he used the I Ching to plot the novel. I ended up not doing that because it's just, I don't know, the Aristotelian logic of the story seemed to override the random fall of the cards. Maybe I'm not approaching it in the right spirit. This is not very Aquarius of me.
Well, that would be interesting, I guess. But like, there's something, I love tarot is so cool because you can just like lay, like, you know, pull the cards and see, just, it's like, it like teaches you how to see somehow. You can like just kind of figure out what colors are talking to what other colors and what figures are standing out and who's facing who. I mean, it's just like great drama.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love using the, like, I love the fact that the characters use the cards and I can kind of write about them and they talk about what they think they mean. And I think it's very interesting. And I'm still learning. Like I said, I haven't read, like, I know I should read various books on the tarot. Especially, I mean, Rachel Pollack, who was an occultist comic book writer, who was transgender, who wrote two books on the tarot. which I haven't read, despite the fact that I'm writing about occultist comic book writers and gender, but still someday I'll get it.
Well, yeah, maybe better to, yeah. Sometimes when I don't know if you're like this, but sometimes when I'm writing something, I can't read anything remotely related to that thing, or it fucks me up.
Yeah, I think I wrote this on my Substack, and again, I think people might have been a bit taken aback, but I said sometimes I research a topic after I've written about it or lectured on it. And it's just
and they're like, how dare you?
And usually I'm right. Usually I found out I was right. These things are in the ether somehow.
My dad always said, be a tiny bit underprepared.
Yeah. Yeah. Because
gives
you
an edge.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to leave a margin of surprise. All right. I want to ask, I don't want to take up your entire day. So I want to start bringing us in. I think that's what they say on podcasts. I have another question, or maybe genre of a couple questions to conclude, is that you are interested in horror movies. That comes out a lot in the book I called Graffiti, which is actually called Confetti, which is available on Amazon.com under the name Confetti for our listeners. But you talk about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Trouble Every Day. And then Hellraiser 2. And I think I've heard you talk on other podcasts about different movies that were vaguely in the horror genre. And you kind of have referred to that on your Substack. That seems to be a particular interest. So I was wondering where that fit in, because I share this too, where this fits into this other constellation of interests we've been discussing.
Probably extremes of emotion, bodily movement, light. I guess a lot of my work, you know, kind of tends to congregate around those edges, cosmic edges, where, you know, something is taken to a limit, too much food, not enough food, too much light, not enough light. And I think horror is like a really cool place to think about that. I mean, aside from just being entertaining, to me, like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which I talk about in Confetti, is like an immensely astrological movie and like one of the great like movies of light ever made. And it's, you know, you can read it like that. And I did read it like that for like a long essay I wrote once. And it was very difficult because I watched the movie very slowly, like, and was rewinding and pausing and zooming. And it was just like disgusting and scary. But it was, yeah. So I guess also I like to kind of put myself through the ringer now that I think about it. I like to pick topics that are going to make me have to research something or spend a lot of time with something that's not going to be comfortable, like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre or the Divine Comedy. Mm-hmm. And there's like the eating and looking, or sense of sight, sense of taste connection too, which I think runs through a lot of my stuff and is a big thing in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, obviously with the cannibal stuff. And all the light, and also in Trouble Every Day, which is about, although I don't think the word is ever said, cannibal stuff. And so I'm interested in like the sort of bringing together of this like far away, more, I guess what is sometimes referred to as like the intellectual sense or whatever of sight, and the close sense of taste, which I guess you quoted from that moment in Confetti, which is trying to do that. So that's like a heady way of answering the horror movie question, but I just really like to be scared too.
Yeah, but no, that was a good answer, because you do seem drawn, because you also did, I think one of the earliest things I read by you is an essay about the Halloween franchise.
Oh yeah.
Which is good. I like that. And you seem drawn to kind of the slasher which, you know, the spilling of the innards, a kind of bodily, the vomiting of blood, which is interesting because you hear somebody is interested in the occult, you'd think they'd be more interested in the metaphysical side of horror, the demon possession,
right.
Ring or something. And you did, you were on one podcast where you, I don't know if it was Barrett's or not, I think it might have been, where you talked about Altered States, which is one of my favorite movies. Do you remember that?
Oh, I wonder where I talked about that. That's an amazing movie.
Yeah. And I feel like this might be a good place to end, because I feel like on the one hand, that movie makes kind of a critique of the occult, because Colleen Kael gave it a bad review, and she said that it combined Paddy Chayefsky's showbiz Jewish ponderousness with Ken Russell's showbiz Catholic glitz. But I thought, really what it is this Catholic Jewish critique of this guy seeking primordial gnosis, and it's just turning him into a beast, because really the most important thing is love and the sacramental love of your wife who is before you. And so on the one hand, it is that kind of critique of the occult, which once you take, it is kind of a critique of essentialism in its way, but, and you can tell me your read on the movie, maybe I'm getting this wrong, but a lot of the people who have been into the occult that I've read, including even Yeats at moments, have said that it's not really about going to this other world, but looking at our world itself with new eyes. Maybe in some ways enchanting this world or making more meaning than obviously exists out of this world, but it's not what William Hurt's trying to do in Altered States, which is find some primordial answer. What do you think?
I absolutely agree with the notion that, at least as I see it and practice it, the so-called occult is not about leaving this world, but about seeing this world differently and seeing the already enchanted aspects of it. And I think we can't really do that without the so-called disgusting, I guess, what does Polly call it? What's the word, like chthonic? Is that how you say it?
I don't know how to say it, but
I don't know how to say it, like most things. That thing, you know, the earth mother stuff, and the repellent, or that, I mean, that's why I love alchemy so much, because it's about the minerals and the metals that are already around us, right? Like that are evidence of the planets in the sky. So yeah, absolutely. And then also the Altered States thing is an amazing like diagnosis of, this reading of progress or the occult or like self-improvement even as something that we just have to like keep going elsewhere to find, as opposed to like wanting what we already have or re-enchanting what feels bad around us. But I think, and it like does it in such a cool fucked up way. I mean, it's so disgusting. It's so messed up. So yeah, and it's like the sky cult stuff, you know, like it's almost like the Elon Musk, which is like fine, but you know, this idea of like going higher and higher off of this planet. Where does it end? And he, like William Hurt in that movie, you know, basically like implodes, kind of both in a way. So I think it's great. I also love when he like lands at the party. He shows up that moment in the party, that there's like that party scene. I forget what year it is, but it's in New York, and he's just like the young William Hurt, like about to go through all this messed up stuff. I mean, I'm also just a William Hurt fan, so I could like talk about him, you know, for a long time. But yeah, I'm like off in La La Land, but am I answering anything?
Yeah, no, that was good. I just, because that was one of those movies I saw when I was like 8.
And oh, wow.
All that struck me was the imagery of the crucified goat with 100 eyes. And then I watched it much more recently, and I found it actually very profound. precisely for its ponderous Jewish and glitzy Catholic critique of the occult, which could then be recuperated as a more, because the paradox is he's seeking this height and it just drives him down and till he becomes like lower than the beasts. And like, this is what's going to happen, you know? And really he should have just had a good teaching career and a good marriage and found the ways in which that was enchanted. Great. All right, well, thanks, Emily. Do you have any anything you'd like to say in conclusion, any self-promotion, anything?
No, I'm really happy that we got to have this chat, and I really appreciate your work so much.
Oh, thank you. Same to you. I really enjoy your work. So everybody buy Confetti. It's called Confetti. Confetti. And I look forward to reading Magenta when that comes out. That's right, isn't it? Magenta.
That's correct. Yes, that's the canceled one.
Right. And then your previous books, which I haven't gotten to yet, which are Wave Archive and G. Subscribe to emily.substack.com. Go to emilyrousseau.com for your divination needs for personal reading, etc. All right, thanks a lot, Emily. I'm going to end the recording. Wait, hold on.